something that, like, the, apparently there was one for Bob Hawke, had Bob Hawke on the front, limited edition sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, I might try and organise to get a couple of hundred port bottles made up to commemorate the closing of the old Parliament House. Non-members bar. I don't know whether it was non-members bar or just the old Parliament House. And then that got too difficult for to do port. So I was discussing with a few people if I just got a couple of hundred bottles of wine with the label to commemorate the closing of the old non-members bar. And one of the Commonwealth drivers, John Corkle, said he'll make inquiries. I said, how do I get the labels made? And like, it's easy to get the bottles and get some wine. It didn't have to be anything special. And put them out. And lo and behold, about 2 weeks later, a Senator Colston, I think it was, there's flyers going around the house. In conjunction with Farmer Brothers, they're producing a commemorative bottle of wine for the closing of Old Parliament House. And I was pretty angry, actually. They stole my thunder sort of thing. Anyway, I was going home one afternoon and I thought, I know, I'll make some badges. I'll inquire in the badges. So I drew out a sort of what I wanted the badge to look like and sent it to Perfection Badges in Sydney. And they come back and initially I was going to order 100. Then I was selling them for $10 each because it costs about $6 to make with Perfection. Then I upped it to, they went. That 100 just went in a matter of minutes sort of thing. So I went to 200 and I said 200 would be better because it's a 200th year, 88 is 200 years since Federation? But then I got more people inquiring about it and I said, look, I can just put you on a list if any of the others fail to pay me, it'll be available to whoever's at the top of the list.
Yeah.
And I had about 30 or 40 on the list. So I ordered another 50, make it 250. And I went around here to the PMs and saw Libby, one of the secretaries there. I was told her about the badge and I said, do you think Bob Hawke would be interested in that one? She said, oh yeah, as long as it's number one. And I said, no, it's not going to be number one, Libby. I'm number one. Because on the back it had the number and life member. I'm number one. I said, I was thinking of giving him 88. She said, no, if it's not number one, don't worry about it. So I said, okay. Walked away. Before I got back in the office, I thought, I know what I can do. I rung Perfection Badges and I said, can I add one more badge to that 1988? So I rung Libby up and I said, what about 1988? And she said, yeah, that'd do nicely. So I rung Perfection Badge and got an extra one off 1988.
What was made on the design of the badge?
Basically, the old Parliament House, just the front on view.
Yep.
I can remember saying something, for some reason I wanted the outline in black because it's immediately recognised as the old Parliament House. I think on the badge it was, the front was non-members bar. That was it. And you know, the building,
yep,
little squat building, they made it bit fatter than I thought, a bit bigger than I thought it was. Thought I wanted it, but everyone was wrapped in it. And at the end of the night of the closing of the non-members bar, because I charged everyone $10. I put about $600 over the bar that night.
Yeah.
Yeah, last night for non-members bar badge holders.
Can I ask about the when you came here in, like you came here in 1973 and left when it closed in 1988. How many changeovers of telephones were there during that time?
Oh.
Roughly, you know, like the actual telephones themselves.
Oh, I see, yeah. When I first got here, I can remember they had the PABX. And they were using multiphones. That was in, because we didn't really have much to do with anything initially when we, all it was to cable up the new wing and get that working.
Uh-huh.
We didn't, I can remember going to a fault because it was a PM's, not his phone, but in his system. They were, Whitlam was in the main floor of the Senate down that corner. Because I can always remember I was on the floor trying to work out, checking the wiring of this phone, and he walked into the office. And when you're on the floor, he's a tall man. That really impressed me. He was tall anyway, but when you're laying on the floor and he walks in and he's standing very close, he's a very tall man.
And was that part of your role to change the telephones over?
Yeah, we changed everything. Well, that was the first. Once we changed the PM over to non-switching units, the rest sort of everyone else followed on.
Yeah.
They got. Because before then they'd have switchboards and single line telephones and things like that off the PABX. When they saw these multi line phones with direct lines to their secretary and the heads of departments and things like their department, things like that, they wanted them. So that was the start of, we replaced everything, virtually every minister and like the usher and, well, not the usher, but we changed all them to NSUs. Then they operated on NSUs until 81, I think.
What's an NSU?
A non-switching unit. It's a multi-line communication system. And in 1981, I thought it was 80, but I've seen some paperwork that it was 81, that a maintenance technician from here, Eddie and myself, were sent to Brisbane to do a training course on the install and maintenance of a Commander N system, a NEC phone. And I can remember the instructor, the first morning we walked in, he introduced himself and we went through that sort of business, and he said, right, he said, he unpacked this phone and he said, this phone is called the Commander N 2260, which is 22 lines, 60 stations off it, if you like. And he said, this is the N2260. This phone is obsolete. And we sort of looked at him and he said, the technology is changing so quickly, they can't, when they start building a phone to hold the technology, somebody comes up with an improvement. Mm-hmm. So they decided that this was a cut-off, no more. The Commander N was going to be built and released. Must have been 1980. Anyway, we done the training on it and we come back, and I believe that Telecom gave the first one to be installed, maybe in Australia, but certainly in Canberra, was the Minister for Communications, Sinclair. And I think Telecom gave it to him. Didn't charge, they were pretty pricey, they were $20,000 for the system. And all the equipment arrived and the phones arrived, and I said it was down near the post office. His office was. And I said, and he said, right, bring all the phones out. We had the distribution box all fitted out, ready to go. Carpenters had built it for us. And he said, bring all the phones. And I said, well, we won't need the phones yet. We've just got to mount the main equipment and terminate the cables and things like that. And he said, no, bring the phones out. And he unpacked, there's only about 10 of them, but he unpacked them all and put them in the hall, up against the wall. And everybody that walked in, like staff and members of parliament and ministers, even some ministers asked what's going on, you know, what are these phones? And Eddie had spout how good they were, they're going to take over the NSUs and things like that. And of course, within weeks, all the ministers were ordering the departments to approach Telecom and say, we had the clerical people, sales people, I suppose, from Telecom in this building constantly, every day, signing up a new system, you know, to be installed. And they'd ring us and ask us, can this do this? And I'd say, yeah, can do that. And then he'd say to me, are you sure can do that? And I said, I don't know, but once we get it in, it won't matter. Because the big attraction of them was they had LED, the lights were LEDs, and they were guaranteed sort of a minimum million on-offs before they fail. And the other NSUs had the incandescent lamps in them, which you were forever replacing lamps around the place, around this place, because there was a few hundred of them in here.
And was that the last big change in this building with the phone system?
The only other thing we had was we put all the members and senators, because they were only single line telephones, as the phones went from dial to push button to touch phones, we replaced them as the new ones come out. It was released, like the push button. Initially, the non-switching units had the rotary dials in them.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a we went around to everyone and put a new dial plate, if you like, and a new push button dial in them. That was a nightmare. So they wouldn't fit. And when you screwed the base down, if it put too much pressure on something, it'd fail. And when they built the new temporary wing annex, they put the annex up over there. We put what was called the T-Series commander in there. They were just a two-line, because they had a secretary, two officers. Not most of them had this room, same as this room. Two people in there, they only need the parallel service or two separate phones.
What would you say generally about the working conditions?
Not real good.
Okay.
Like, we're a lot of in the floors, in the ceilings, under the floors. There's down near the post office, I got a scare one day. It was either a big rat or a cat. It was just a skeleton, fully assembled, hadn't collapsed or anything. You had to do crawl past them, plenty of rats. And of quite a few cats, but the cats would stay away from me. Rats are an inquisitive sort of thing. They're not scared of you or anything. Cats would bolt as soon as you shone the torch at them. The red, we had the floor up in the hallway, and Red was under the floor, and I had the safety barriers around it, and I sort of yelled out, "You there, Red?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, There's a cat down here. He said, "Oh, no, it's," he said, I think it's a senator." "Oh, no, it's a rat." And there happened to be a lot of people walking past. I don't know if any of them were, but I'm trying to shush him up.
How long would you be in a kind of enclosed area like the floor or in the ceiling? What periods of time would you spend in those places?
Occasionally an hour. Sometimes, a lot of the times, because we'd be pulling in big cable, the number of times we had to upgrade the power leads from the PABX, which is in the basement on the Senate corner, to the Prime Minister's, which is on the lower ground floor near the attendance box there. And we had to pull inch thick two, red and black, for positive and negative, from the PABX. It virtually went out onto the footpath down to the door, to the tunnel. Pull it right through the tunnel, one length, no joins. So we had about six of us at the right corners, and that was in there, I reckon, be about 3 hours in there, pulling that through, just pulling it along, handing it to the next point.
Did you have protective clothing?
Only overalls, steel boot caps, steel cap boots. Didn't have helmets, I don't think. Stack hats or glasses, or they had an asbestos scare in the PABX. They were sealing off all the beams, the steel beams in the PABX, so that, of course, it was closed. It was restricted area. So every time you had to go to the PABX, which is maybe three or four times a day, that's why the restrictions are in. Normally it'd be about a dozen times a day you'd go to the PABX. So they had a shower. You had to put this plastic clothing on. You go in, you do the whatever the job was, only take a couple of minutes, run a jumper or something like that, 5 minutes, go out through the shower off, get dressed and come back, and then something else, it'd be a fault that you had to go down the PABX. So we end up sneaking out the back. There's a little lawn area there with ladder down to the back door of the, to a door to the PABX. We used to sneak down there. That's when the asbestos folks weren't there, because they caught us in there with, without going through their rigmarole. And it turned out it wasn't asbestos anyway, but they did seal it off.
Did you, were you in a union, trade union?
Yeah, I've just joined the retired technicians union. It's a union. Oh, I forget what they called us there.
Was it a
ETCU, Electrical Trades?
Oh, the ETU, was it? Electrical Trades Union.
Might have been. No, but it must have had communications in there somewhere. Because it was communications union. Did never go on strike.
I was going to ask if there were any industrial actions.
There was industrial action once, first time and last time ever, while I was there, and it was to do with the exchange. The main thing, it was, we were just, they were working to rules.
Ah, yeah.
And because, like, the supervisor, the bosses of telecom in Canberra, because people were working to rules, they wouldn't touch anything that they hadn't been trained on or anything like that, even though they knew the operation of it. But the bosses were wandering around, going to the exchange and saying to the tech, we want you to work on ARM, which was a type of equipment, switching equipment. And the tech would refuse, so they stood him down. They'd stand him down. And they finished with all the exchanges, and they needed techs in the exchanges. So they started going around the depots, subs install depots. They find a tech, say, we want you to come to Dixon, City Exchange, or Barton Exchange,
yep,
to do some work. And the install tech would just say, well, I'm not trained in it, so I'm not going to do it. All right, you're stood down. And but we'd get a phone call. They knew where our office was in Parliament House here. And we got a call from Woden to say they're headed over to Parliament House. Get all your techs together. And then he said, yeah, we'll get them together, all right. So we got together and he said, let's go. We went over to the Treasury building, which needed a pass swipe card to get in. And we just sat in PABX in the Treasury building, and Kevin and Jack, the two supervisors, were, of course there was no mobiles in those days.
No.
They saw us the next day when it was all over, and they said, we couldn't find you yesterday. And Eddie said, oh, we were hiding out, that's why. And He said, why? He said, well, if you had have caught up to us, we would have to refuse to do what you wanted and be stood down. He said, oh, yeah, you would have too.
Who was the union rep here? Was there like a shop steward?
No, well, the shop steward or the rep would have been out in the... We didn't have a rep here as such.
Okay. Yep. Were you a believer in the trade unions? Like, were you committed to trade unionism?
Don't really know. I used to look at them as they never done much for us. They didn't seem to do much for us, you know. And that's why apparently this stop work meeting was held. The work to rules or whatever it was come about. I know it cost whatever a year to join, so that was a waste of money. They seem to I suppose I did support them because when we'd threatened strike action, the government seemed to fold because there's a pretty powerful union, you know, in control of communications of Australia. If we went on strike, you know, it'd be a catastrophe, I reckon.
Were the wages okay?
Yeah, well, they were because we done a hell of a lot of overtime because of the situation we were in here. Every election, after the election, there was turmoil, you know, especially a change of government. If it was a change of government, it was all hell broke loose. But, yeah, the pay was okay, I'd say, you know, just a normal pay.
Neil, I wanted to ask about the tools of your trade. Like, over that time you were here, what were your basic tools? Like, what were the essential tools that you needed to do the job?
Well, I always walked around with a screwdriver, pliers and cutters.
Yeah.
And later on, terminating tools. And a Budinski, a test handset. They basically, that's all you needed, really. Solder and iron, but you didn't carry it with you.
No.
I just had a tool bag with like maybe fuses, lamps for the NSUs. Because we usually had a soldering iron sitting at each main IDF distribution frame sort of thing. You have a bit of solder and screws and a spare socket. Very little, because here, if you went over to the Treasury building or other buildings, you'd take your toolbox with all your gear, But, you know, if we had to drill a hole somewhere, it was down in the office anyway, so it was on site.
Yeah.
When the hammer drill came out, you had to go and sign it off at the Woden depot and bring it back as soon as you could, because they only had two for the whole south side.
How would you use the hammer drill? Like, in what would that do?
Oh, drilling holes through concrete floors. Like one time here, this is the main floor, isn't it? Just out here, we're drilling a hole through the, between the, like this section of the building into the, it was up a ladder, and it's going helpfully, the, you know, the noise hammer drills make. And woman come out from leader of the oppositions and said, "Can you drill a bit quieter?" And I said, "Well, hardly, you know," and said, "It's just that